went out there, I hope you realize the projection, the projected way this weekend will go, and that you're not to move beyond your safety. Now, that doesn't mean without challenges. I mean, Dharma is supposed to challenge us. It's supposed to take us to our edge, where what we understand and what we don't, that edge. So, and that doesn't feel safe, but the sense of safety I'm talking about is even when you're questioning the edges of your life and the edges of reality, there's still a sense of place. There's still a sense of whether you can hold it or not. There's an inward sense, is the best word I can find, of stability and being able to ask the questions that you most want to ask but yet are afraid to ask, like who am I, what am I, all of those questions. So it doesn't come from terror, but you don't know where you're going, so there is some anxiety, for lack of a better word, or concern about where this is taking me. Okay, so everybody has those areas in which they're anxious about their exploration. Okay. The Dharma never lets you down. Never. You're being held by something much more vast than your own resources. And when you feel that, and you will at some point as you make the sacred in life known, you will also see the sacred within yourself, and I'll talk about that in just a minute. This beautiful sense of abiding curiosity. Just so that gives you confidence too. There's a confidence there. Now I can go anywhere. I can ask any question. I can explore anything. I'll take my time to do it. I mean, when you start looking at some of your self-assumptions that have driven your life because of the intensity of the belief we give them, and you start looking at those and questioning them, that's as jolting of an experience as you'll ever have. And the only thing that reason you would do that is because you sense that there's sacred even in that. That there's something that left outside of myself, I would be incomplete. If this is not understood, there's something incomplete in the world. And all it does is take one pattern or aspect of us that we hold outside to make the whole system incomplete. So that searching continues. Because I'm not able or willing to ask the important questions so that I can be found rather than searching for. It's not easily explained, and it certainly isn't easily understood at certain times in the practice to realize that reality is a mirror image of how we hold ourselves. We think reality's out there and I'm in here, and that somehow I don't know what I'm trying to do in Dharma, but somehow I'm trying to do away with this so there's only that. No, that's not it at all. This and that are mutually correlated. They depend upon one another. The reason we see in divided terms, you and me and this and that, is because inside we hold to the fact that I am someone, and therefore there has to be something outside of me. That logic is what forms our perception. I see the way I believe. No one's doing this to us. You see? And what happens is, as I quiet or relax, or use any of the terms we've used this morning, as I quiet down and the tension comes off some of these displays, perception shifts. It changes. You don't enter oneness. Oneness isn't another plane of existence. It's the change of perception. It's looking at life from non-tension, from a non-tension focus. Where things, because we are not, the thing that we call ourselves is no longer held with such individual certainty. When we're not looking from that sense of I am looking, the looking in the eye become a singularity. And consciousness then shifts to oneness or universal seeing. We shift out of the locale of what I call myself. Awareness is not locatable. It's not in here, me being aware. And when I drop that particular place where I am being aware and see what it really is, then awareness takes on a universal perspective. It's not governed by the mind. It never was. It holds the mind, but it's not from the mind. It's not of the mind. And when something is released from its entrapment of me seeing, everything is seeing itself. This sounds crazy. I mean, if I listen to this tape, I think, oh, you're crazy. But it's absolutely true. This is absolutely true. Or I'm crazy, and you guys can all... Anyway. But I'm not crazy. So all of the Dharma is held within that changing nature of self and object. It all comes in as this sense of I is transformed from observation, seeing. It just doesn't hold itself together. I mean, how many times do you have to hear your thoughts, see your emotions before you know you're not your thoughts and your emotions, they're just happening. And when that happens at a certain threshold, they don't even bother you. They don't even control your focus or your attention. And when that happens, they're part of the space from which everything arises. They're no longer me thinking. And so the sense of I, which is dependent upon thought for its livelihood, for its belief, becomes amorphous. It changes from an egoic perspective to a wisp of self. A wisp of self still can differentiate, but it's not held in place by a certain mechanism of thought and emotion. This is not what I sat down to talk about. And I think it's way too far out there. So I'm going to reel this back in a little bit. But to have some sense of that, that we each control our own perceptions. And as the relaxation takes hold and is deeply intoned, what we see also changes. It doesn't mean that it all becomes homogenized into one thing. That's not what oneness means. It just isn't separated by space. I'm doing the best I can here. I know it's not... So at first, and this is more to bringing it down to something applicable. At first, it's all self-defense. You know, we're keeping things out to keep ourselves tucked in, safe. You know, I'm not outside of my skin, so I'll keep that at bay and keep the separation going. Mind and body separated, boundaries there, that's keeps me located somewhere up here, and even there I don't want the whole thing, I just want the part I like. So I'll stay in this corner of the mind and let everything else kind of be shadowed or unconscious. So now I've holed up into like a little pinpoint over here, and that's me. And so what does the world look like? It looks like pinpoints. And then I judge everybody from my perceptions of myself as being whatever it is that I'm assuming is good or bad or this or that or whatever. And so then I see out through my opinions and evaluations from that point in which I take myself to be. And then all of a sudden it changes so that we're not defending one component of the mind against another. The whole of the mind is received without so much tension, that even the difficult parts of ourselves are allowed to be to surface and to be seen. Then we start seeing other people in that same way. We start seeing minds. We start seeing people, you know, and you give them the, and it opens up. It's not, wow, they didn't do that, or in the way I used to hold myself. They're just operating according to their conditioning, which is what the mind is. It's conditioned, it's just conditioning. Even if it comes at you in some kind of malicious form, it's still just their conditioning. And we begin to realize that we're not really responsible for what's emitted in the mind. The mind is conditioned, it's just neurons firing, and it fires into a particular pattern that we've lived with our whole life and reinforced, and this is what comes out. That doesn't mean we're not accountable to it. It means that we're not responsible for its emission, for what it is that it looks like when it expresses itself. That's huge to understand that. Because then you stop with every emission. It stops being a, you know, devil or good or evil. And then that allows a particular perception or perspective of others as well. And they just don't know that they're conditioned. Or they wouldn't be acting like that. And so this sense of defensiveness is where we begin. This sense of wanting to protect what we believe ourselves to be and keep everything out. And it's a very tightly strung internal perception. Very tight. And that changes or moves or evolves in Dharma to receiving what's it. First we're defending ourselves, where very little gets in. To receiving ourselves. You want to know what the mind is doing, and so you start receiving the information rather than protecting yourself from the information. That's a huge shift. That's actually a shift of identity. Because you, even though the sense of self is still very much in place, you're holding the world in a very different way, from a very different vantage point. Because what comes at you is not a threat. You're seeing it now as part of your own understanding, as part of your own growth. And that's why, you know, difficult situations are to our advantage, although they never feel like it necessarily. But and you can look back in retrospect from some of the most difficult times in your life and you see how you grew from those tragedies or crisis points. Why? Because we were receiving the information and learning about it. And then emotions like grief or other very difficult human emotions become more honored, more allowed to be held, allowed to be felt, and they actually take, like grief, take you to tenderness. And tenderness becomes its own advantage because it makes it softer and more pliable, more aware, more available. And so we stop being threatened by emotions such as grief. And then when emotions that are hard, like anger, arise within us, this is an important point. When we're receiving those emotions, when we've adapted and we've learned how to receive our inward life, anger is a secondary, there are primary colors and secondary colors. My wife tells me this because she's an artist. And green and red and blue? No? What?
What? Yellow, blue, and red are primary.
Yellow, blue, and red are primary. Okay? So there are, you can sense primary emotions in you. But anger is a secondary emotion. Okay, what's a primary emotion? I'm just talking. I'm not actually talking. I know what I'm talking about. Okay, wait a second. You're going way ahead. Okay. Vulnerability is primary. Fear is a reaction to vulnerability. Okay? Okay, so this is really interesting to me. When you're vulnerable, any act, because it's a threatening emotion, because you're vulnerable, you're wide open, you don't have any protection, right? So most of us who are in between or in the defended stage of our development want some covering so that we don't have to feel vulnerability. So what's the reaction to vulnerability? Anger. Because now you have the power that vulnerability doesn't have. Anger gives you the strength and force and aggression to stop what you feel is making you vulnerable. So it's a reaction to vulnerability. Right? Now I can get a sense when I'm angry, okay, so, you know, this is, I'm protecting myself from being vulnerable. What am I vulnerable? What in this moment am I vulnerable to? And what am I, it's caring, really. My vulnerability is a result of caring. So we even go drop down another level. My caring is what's being, is vulnerable. I care about something, and in order, and that's been threatened. And so in order to assert myself so that I know that I can get back to my caring, I get angry. And so you can trace anger back to love, which is the basic emotion. Isn't this interesting? I didn't read this in any psychology book. I didn't, you know, you'd think, okay, so what's going on here? What's going on here? We just take anger as a fact. Now we have to do something. Okay, when you're angry, count to 10. Well, that's fine. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10. Next day or next moment, I'm angry again. What is that? You know, it hasn't. But when you start seeing that, oh, I see, I'm vulnerable. I really care about something, and what I care about is being threatened. And so all the beautiful emotions, the healing emotions like love, kindness, they're all in alignment with vulnerability. To express those emotions, we have to be vulnerable. To express love, we have to be vulnerable. All of what we call the negative emotions, like fear or anger or impatience or whatever it is, are a reaction to vulnerability because it doesn't feel safe. I want to get over it. So now I start Okay, so I can. Now I'm going down, you see, you're going down to less tension, less self-assertion. The world no longer looks angry, it looks vulnerable. It looks like it's hurting. And what does that do to me? It opens my heart. When they're angry, it's because I've seen from that perspective, and nobody looks tender and sweet at all. Everybody looks... But when I see from vulnerability, now all of a sudden I can really open, because I feel vulnerable too. And now I can... Even though it's still coming out as a form of anger or protest, that's not where the mind lands in terms of its communication or connection. And so we begin to see that it's really dependent upon ourselves understanding what this mind and body is in its essence in order to understand the world in its essence. I'm appalled by how we are reacting to Trump. Is that what we want our lives to be about? I'm not suggesting voting for him. I'm suggesting understanding ourselves sufficiently so that we're not in protest all the time. So that we're not... an anger reaction, because his actions and proclamations are taking us to vulnerability. We feel vulnerable with him, at least I do. And of course, out of that comes our protesting anger. I don't mean you don't vote and you don't hold signs and you don't march. You do all that. It's just, what do we want our lives to be about? Because it's not going to get any... You don't self-improve from that angry protesting demeanor. You don't. You don't go forward. You go backward. And given enough time, you will become Trump. Given enough time, you'll become everything. Your character is in evolution. You've already probably had characters that you would not ever wish to be near. So from the defensiveness to receiving. Now I'm vulnerable. But there's something beautiful that happens within vulnerability if we can hold our course. Now we can offer. So receiving evolves into offering. To being seen from abundance rather than from scarcity. Now from abundance, everything is sacred. That's the truth. We're all, where's the sacred? Where would the sacred possibly be? Is that the sacred? That's the image we have of the sacred. That's what the best the mind can do to approach the sacred. Create a statue. You see? Sing a song, chant, some outward manifested form that allows us to know the sacred is even around somewhere. Go to church, I don't know. And here it is. When I say that, I think everybody can see it because it's in the moment I'm saying it, it's so obvious. So look where we've come. We've come from contraction, the ache of tightness and tension, to relaxation. We've just traveled that. We've just traveled that path. And along the way, perceptions have modified, and they've modified because the tension that we have labored under as my need, my desire. Desire is attention. Fear is attention. I've labored under these tensions, and the perception I have from them look like the world I live in. Horns honking at me. And so I learned just a single word. See, just give me, it's the simplest thing. I don't have to live with that tension, with that fear, with that anger, with that division. I don't have to search far and wide for an antidote. I don't have to do that. I have to learn how to dispel the tensions that are inward. But first I have to learn how to face those tensions. That's where it gets hard. We have spent our life conditioned, that's the mind, avoiding those difficulties. Or using them in service of our profession. I'm a therapist, now I become a better therapist. So you release one tension, you build another. Me as a therapist. And how good I'm becoming from facing my difficulties. See, it doesn't. We don't get out of anything here. Our expanse, our awareness, must be much more vast than our mental logic. So there may be times in the course of this weekend together where we can just be quiet, and for a moment you can sense or intimate a tensionless life. Just for a moment, doesn't matter. Don't. As soon as you say, I want that back, you've created more tension for yourself. As soon as we grab a hold of what we had and it is no longer, we've created the fix from which we were prior to having the experience that freed us. think that's enough. Thank you. Okay. We're going to change this whole thing around a little bit. We're going to have dyads now. Now, don't get so, it's not social, there's no social anxiety here. Dyads are, you don't even have to look at the person, okay? So it's very safe. Okay, so don't.